This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's jump right into things today because joining me in the studio is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Mayor Walsh, it's good to see you again.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And let me let listeners know that if you got a question for Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, you can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're going to talk about Boston police, about Boston schools, maybe a little bit about the places and travels that the mayor have done in the past couple of weeks and months. Again, we're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. All right, Mayor Walsh, let's just start right off with the latest, the big news of change at the Boston Police Department. Yeah. I mean, tell me about the thinking and the process that went behind you picking Superintendent-in-Chief William Gross as the next BPD commissioner.
Well, you know, you always... One of the most important roles, they're all important roles in the city, but one of the most important roles that we have is police commissioner. It's probably the person I talk to the most about the most sensitive issues, maybe next to superintendent of schools. And, you know, I generally start my day every morning talking to Commissioner Evans, and throughout the day we talk, and if there's an incident, we talk about it, and we figure out what we have to do. And so for a while I've been thinking about, what if Billy Evans leaves, who's the next person in line? And you know, different people in the office are very capable. Mm-hmm. And then also thinking about, do I do nationwide search? Do I need to do a nationwide search? Right. So anyway, fast forward, about a month and a half ago, I think it was about a month and a half ago, Boston College started talking to Billy Evans. The story broke a few weeks ago. It wasn't finalized. There was no final deal. And you know, some unnamed sources said that he's leaving, and it wasn't finalized.
Yeah, but WBZ had it right, though.
Well, ultimately, you fast forward a few weeks later, but that deal could have fallen through, and nothing might have happened, and they would have been wrong. And I don't like to play out the news in the news all the time as we're moving forward here. So anyway, while that was going on, I started thinking about who's going to be succeeding Billy Evans. And Chief Gross has been with the Boston Police Department 30-plus years. He started as a cadet, born in Boston, grew up teenage years, I believe, in Baltimore, came back to Boston, served as a Boston Police cadet, Boston Police officer in almost every role on the police department as beat cop, gang unit, all the different areas. He's been in the command staff for about 9.5 years. He was the night commander.
Yeah.
When Billy Evans became the commissioner, he became the chief. And so for the last almost 5 years, they've been working hand in hand together. So when you think about who's going to succeed Billy Evans and what we've been doing in the police department, how do you build on that and add to that? The natural person was Willie mm-hmm. Gross.
Yeah, so he knows the city, obviously, and knows BPD well as both a Bostonian
and respected in the community.
Yeah,
and that's key.
But let me ask you, how important is it to you that he will be the first African American commissioner?
Let me tell you, I think I underestimated the impact, the emotional impact that I'm seeing out in the street of Chief Willie Gross. I was talking to a woman yesterday, African American woman from New York, lives in Boston now for about 15 years, and she came out to me literally almost in tears saying this is her city now and how proud she was and of the impact. The impact is big. I mean, it's great to obviously have the first person of color, the first African-American person running the police department. It's 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It probably should have happened long before 2018. But the impact it has on people is remarkable. And to have a person who's making history in Boston, who has the respect of the rank and file officers, who has the respect of the community, is such an important piece. And what's happening in our city is, you know, you're looking at, you know, violent crime is down, shootings are down, homicides are up 2 this year from this time last year. Complaints against police officers are down over the last 4 years. A lot of good stats over there, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
you know, there's a story that's running in the Washington Post today that talks about the homicide clearance rates, that we're one of the worst, the worst city in America for homicide clearance rates. That's an issue we have to work on. Now, Billy Evans in the last 10 years has increased that by over 10%, that number, to the previous commissioner. But we, you know, Commissioner Gross will have to focus on that number and really work to get that number
right
down, because family members who lose loved ones want to know who's responsible for taking the life of the loved one. And that's something that we have to continue to focus on.
Well, I want to play a little bit of tape here because you talked about how it's important that that Chief Gross is an African-American and a Bostonian and a longtime member of BPD. This week, we spoke with Jamal Crawford. He's creator and editor of The Blackstonian. That's an online publication that deals with issues in the black community in Boston. And, you know, it's interesting because he said, yeah, it's great that Boston will finally have a black commissioner. But he also said that he sees Chief Gross as a police officer first and an African-American man second, and that he wonders about the allegiances that Chief Gross might have. But here's Jamal Crawford and what he had to say about the pick.
I think that what we miss here is a process, a community process. Can we have a community process similar to what they did for the superintendent? Maybe there's a search committee. These people have to attend forums. It would have been nice to have a pick from candidates, and I'm uncomfortable with them emerging from rank and file anyway because there's too many allegiances and relationships there.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I know Jamal well. We've had conversations about a whole host of topics. I appreciate his point of view, but I think as a commissioner, you need to make sure that you have the respect of the officers, and you also have to have the respect of the community. This is not an us versus them situation. This should not be the police department versus the community, and particularly the black community. And I think too many places around America, that might be the perception and the reality. And you can't have that. That's not going to earn trust, and that's not going to, when I say trust, I'm talking trust on both sides. And there really has to be, an understanding and a trust on both sides of, and there shouldn't be, there's not two sides. There shouldn't be two sides. And I think you also have to have a commissioner that has the respect of the officers. I mean, for example, Lisa Holmes took over as our superintendent of training for our officers. And 4 years ago, she changed the way we train our officers. We trained our officers on racism and bias, and we trained on how to handle situations and really started to change the way that we train our police officers. And I think we're seeing some of that results in the 50% fewer complaints against police officers. I don't want a situation in a neighborhood that people say, well, those are the cops over there and we're the community. That should not be the case. We have to continue to build towards trust.
Well, on the other hand, though, I'm remembering a Globe analysis from last year that found that some 15,000 individuals that police have had observed, interrogated, or searched over the course of 2016, that of those 15,000, almost 70% of them were black. I mean, so when you talk about repairing trust and having a good relationship between the BPD and the community, that's a tall order here. Right?
Yeah, but I don't think the relationship is as broken as that report might have insinuated. Complaints are down nearly half, but when I say in saying that, there's always opportunity for more growth and more relationship building, and something that's really important to do. I mean, I did a poll in my campaign in October of 2000 and last year, 2015, and found that 65% of the black community think the police officers are doing a good job. Now, what does that say? That's a poll. It's a survey of a group of people. It's not about polls, and it's about getting out there and doing the job. And I think that, you know, Chief Gross's leadership, he has the ability to be able to take this department and continue this department moving to the next level. Yeah. And that's what's really important here. And I think there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of stats and a lot of concerns people are going to have in different areas. You know, policing is not an easy job. And there's going to be distrust in certain areas, and in some areas going to be a lot of trust. And, you know, you're talking about dealing with situations that are very incredibly difficult when a police officer is called to a scene. So, again, I think it's about preparing and training the officers the best they possibly can do their job. And you want to make sure it starts with the leadership, putting down a good, strong message about moving forward. You know, in Boston, I want to say in the last few years, we're 15% fewer arrests in Boston. That's a great stat. So instead of locking people up, we're lifting people up. And we have to continue to do it on two fronts, both on the policing side, but also on the public safety and on the trauma side, and continue to move into the neighborhood.
We're speaking with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. And if you've got a question for Mayor Walsh, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I want to talk about schools for a second, but let's take a quick call here because housing is always an issue. And Kevin from Jamaica Plain has a question. You're on the air, Kevin.
Hi, this is Kevin Guevara. I'm just calling because I lived in Boston my whole life, went from Lawsondale to South End, and now I live at Jamaica Plain. And one thing that I see that always happens over and over is that people that live in low-income housing are finding less and less housing to actually move into. I actually live in South Street, and I've noticed that within the last year, about 6 months ago, they built a really expensive condominium next to our development, and now there's actually another one that's being built. There's two more huge condominiums being built right across the street from the MBTA station, Forest Hills, and another two more in Hyde Park Gap. What's actually being done to take care of the low-income families that actually really live in these communities that didn't just come from other cities, from other states that just acquired
right.
a job?
Kevin, I'm going to just jump in here. I'm going to jump in here because I heard your question about what for the mayor about what
I think,
is actually being done for low-income
residents. I think there's
residents.
A couple things going on here, Kevin. Number one is in the city in the last 5 years, we've built about 4,000 low-income units in the city, and we'll continue to move on our production on that. It's something that's very important to us. And we also don't have a partner in the federal government when it comes to voucher program. And that's another issue, that vouchers aren't available for families, and we're having a problem there. And we also have a divestment in our public housing authorities around the country, but in particular in Boston. So when you think about what we've done in Boston, I think we've put over, in the last four and a half years, we've put over $100 million into housing in the city. We came up with a housing plan to create 53,000 units of new housing in our city by the year 2030 of all different income levels. We have about 26,700 units either under construction or built right now. And we have about the rest of the balance up to 53,000 is roughly in the permitting process. And we're looking now to reevaluate our housing goals and move them up. We inherited a housing problem in Boston when we took over in 2014. It's at no fault of anyone other than people wanting to move into the city. So we're also working regionally where we haven't in the past with mayors from across the greater Boston area because of the housing shortage, not just in Boston, but through the greater Boston area. So there's a lot that's being done and a lot more that has to be done. And the legislature just passed a $1.6 billion housing bond bill, the largest in the history of the Commonwealth. So there's a lot of work going into this and a lot of planning going into this, and we have to continue that. What's happening with some of these developments that are being moved out, people are selling their homes, they're getting big payouts for their homes, and they're selling 2 and 3 family homes, and the people that are renting those homes that for years have rented it at a lower level, you have a new landlord coming in who in some cases overpaid for a property, and they're evicting people. But we just have to continue to create supply of housing, middle-income and low-income housing on the market.
Yeah. Well,
it's a complicated issue. It's not a simple answer, but I mean, I know a lot of people want to point the finger at somebody, and they want to point the finger at the city, and that's fine. But what we have to do is continue to try and stay ahead of the pace. And Boston is one of the cities in Massachusetts, and probably the largest by far, that's actually building low-income housing, and other places aren't.
Yeah. You know, it is complicated, and housing is this thing that touches everyone. So I promised listeners that this is something that we've talked about on this show a lot, and Radio Boston will continue to do that. But there are some really specific things about Boston Public Schools, Mayor Welsh, that I want to talk to you about. And I mean, these are things that we can actually point to decisions having been made and whether or not they were the right ones. And so, first of all, you know that there was this Northeastern University report that was released that found that the computerized assignment system for BPS is actually making segregation worse in the city and leaving many Black and Latino students in the lower performing schools. Now, this was an assignment system, a computer system that was actually approved by the school committee in 2013, implemented a year later. You're implemented during your first year in office in 2014. I mean, did the BPS make a mistake with
I don't know. We're evaluating that now. The new superintendent, the interim superintendent, and the school committee are on top of this. I had a conversation today with Tanisha Sullivan. She was in my office, and we talked about this. And I'm going to be briefed again on it this week to find out what we have to do. I mean, the implementation was voted on in 2013. I don't think the intention was to segregate our schools. I think the intention was to get better assignments for families. The problem with using algorithms like this and using technology, sometimes you lose that human touch as far as applying having
yeah.
families.
Well, the algorithm
schools.
Does what it's told to, like right?
Exactly.
You know, and so there were rules put in,
yeah.
and you know, I think that one of the rules was look for the highest performing schools within a certain area radius of.
I don't
want
to go back to segregated schools. I mean,
yeah.
We don't want to go back there. You know, we've been living with the impact of busing and what happened in the 60s, 70s and for a long time in the city. And the one area that we should not have to be worrying about, families should be able to, when they pick their schools and pick the schools they want to go to, they should have an equal shot to get into those schools. Now, the problem we have to really get down to the bottom of it is that we have more level one and level two schools now. Those are the best performing mm-hmm. schools in the city than any other time in the history of our city. But the issue is we have to get good high achieving schools in every neighborhood too. It can't just be, so we have a two prong problem. One is worry about segregation, that kids don't have opportunities to get into these high performing schools. And number two, the fact that the attention needs to be, how come we don't have all high performing schools in our district?
Right. And so here's the challenge with that, I think, is that you're right. They're both pressing problems, but they're also operating on different timescales, right? Like school assignments is something that BPS has to deal with every year.
Yeah.
But getting a lot more high-performing schools across the district is a longer-term project.
It shouldn't be longer-term. It shouldn't be longer-term. When you look at some of the turnaround schools that have turned around in Boston over the last decade, they've been able to turn around within a matter of 3 years. And those are some of the situations that we have to see and see how do we increase the turnaround. The turnaround should not take 25 years to turn a district.
Well, so if we already have examples of schools turning around in 3 years, we already know, I mean, we must know what they did. Yeah. Like, so what's stopping sort of spreading that throughout the system?
I think you're dealing with a system that isn't moving quick enough. You're dealing with choices and decisions that are made at central office that might not be what they need to be made across the district. I think you have a couple of things I've asked Laura Perel to do when she gets in there is to make sure that central office is working for every single school in the district.
The new superintendent.
And making sure that every leader in the district has an opportunity and understanding of what's expected of them, and also how do they get the information from the district schools. And that's not consistent. And that should not be the case in 2018, as I mentioned earlier, in the police department. That should not be the case here in Boston today. And you know, this is a nationwide issue in all districts across America, but we are a district. Our size is roughly 57,000 kids in our district. There is no reason why we aren't better performing all across. And there's some great things happening in our schools all across the district, but in my opinion, our goal has to be 100% level one and level two schools in Boston, not 50%.
I mean, so as you mentioned, we do have a new superintendent for BPS. And, you know, I've never had a chance to actually ask you a question or two about the departure of former Superintendent Tommy Chang. I mean, you've said that was a mutual decision.
Yeah.
But WBUR spoke with some school committee members who actually said that they were sad to see Tommy Chang go, and it wasn't clear if he had actually lost their support. I mean, so what were your biggest concerns with his leadership?
Well, I mean, you know,
was leaving the only solution for that?
He left, and I think, you know, Tommy Chang on the educational side of it has laid down some good, strong foundations there, and we're Excellence for All program, and looking at the high performing schools, looking at the schools that have I'm drawing a blank. I'll think of it in a minute. The testing to get into higher level education programs. Those things he did really well. The gains across the district, I think, was something that he would like to have seen higher, and I would have liked to have seen higher. Having a 72% graduation rate is the highest all time in high schools, but we still have a report that came out that talked about all of the inefficiencies in our high school program mm-hmm. that aren't working properly. We have more level one and level two schools in any other period of the history of our city, but we still have issues with underperforming schools in Boston. We had issues with the budget issues as far as getting money to schools and not getting money to schools. This isn't all Tommy Chang. This was something he inherited as he moved forward. Tommy Chang is going to make a great superintendent in the United States. I think being in Boston I think he learned a lot. I think he left here with learning a lot. But again, the gains weren't quick enough. You just mentioned to me a second ago about the school assignment program and high-level ranking schools, level one and level two, and talking about we need to speed that up. We need to have more higher-performing schools. Yeah. We have some programs like Build BPS that's out there. That's our billion-dollar investment in building new schools.
Are we going to get more details about the plan, about the Build BPS plan?
Well, it's evolving. It's evolving. It's going to the next details of the plan is going to be created by working with the community and the community coming up with it. You know, we're doing Boston Arts Academy. It's under construction right now. The next school up is the Carter School to Josiah Quincy once we can figure out the location. So those are going to be the next three schools that we're going to be reconstructing brand new. The Dearborn STEM Academy is opening in September, a brand new state-of-the-art first new high school in Boston in nearly 35 years. So we're working on and we're retrofitting and renovating all these different schools across the district. There was a story in the Globe that compared us to charter schools that said we're not moving fast enough. It's an unfair comparison when you're talking about an individual charter school with a separate board that can build one school at a time, where we have 125 school buildings, two-thirds of which were built prior to World War II. So that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah. But, I mean, about Build BPS, again, just to reiterate, it's a $1 billion investment, as you said, in the school buildings for 10 years. But does the city know when it's going to be able, BPS know when it's going to be able to give us more details about which buildings, which schools?
Yeah, the next process, the community process, working with the community. Think about this for a minute. We have 125 schools in Boston, buildings. Most of them haven't been touched in 50 years. Two-thirds of those schools were built prior to World War II. When I came in as mayor, there was no process in place to build a new school in Boston. The school building authority was very rarely used. We've worked with the school building authority now in the last four summers, including this one. We've probably almost got close to $90 million of investment in renovating roofs and boilers and doors and windows in our schools. We've built the Boston Dearborn STEM Academy. Boston Arts Academy is getting a brand new state-of-the-art school. It's a complicated situation. Mm-hmm. It's not that simple. And I think when we think about Build PPS, on top of all that situation in Boston, we have 125 schools. We have 22 different grade configurations and 22 different start times.
Yeah. So no, I get it. It's complicated.
So when you think about that, this has been over year after year after year, adding start times, adding grade configurations. And what we need to do is get to a system that is more manageable for the parents, for the students, for the schools, for the transportation, and that's what we're striving for.
Mayor Walsh, I'm jumping in here because we've only got 2.5 minutes left, and I do want to talk to you a little bit about your travels. But there is a question about BPD that I didn't ask you that I wanted to.
Yes.
We were told a while ago that in June, I believe, the final report on the body cam pilot program was supposed to come out. We called BPD yesterday to see if that report was forthcoming. They couldn't give us an answer. Do you know when that final report is coming out?
What's going to happen now is Commissioner Gross will be working on that report and getting the finalization of that report out. And I'd say probably within the next 2 weeks it'll be done.
It's
pretty much done now. They're putting the final touches on it. So what we're going to do is the fact that we had a series of incidents here. We had a young police officer that was killed in Weymouth. Which pushed the announcement of Commissioner Gross off for a week.
Yeah.
We had Commissioner Gross's announcement this week. His first day is in a week from Sunday. And then when he takes over, rather than have it being announced through two different commissioners, we'll be able to have one administration because they're the ones who are going to have to take the next step.
So it'll be made public in a couple of
weeks.
Okay, interesting. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. So we got a minute and a half left here, and I did want to ask
was great.
You've been around Ohio, yeah. Indiana.
Yeah, I was. Somebody in the paper said I should be in Boston more. I was literally out of city for about 40 hours. Landed in Columbus, sat down with some Columbus mayors, some Ohio mayors, talking about opioids and infrastructure. Then started talking to Danny O'Connor. He's a gentleman running for Congress, special election a week from yesterday, who's on the ballot out there. One of those seats, kind of like a Connor Lamb type seat that could be picked up by the Democrats. I was out there campaigning for Danny. Spoke to some labor officials, spoke to some union members. Was in Mansfield, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. Ended my trip in Indianapolis, and then came back to Boston.
Okay, I want to read you this quote from the Herald. They spoke with a guy named Carl Nutzling. He's a business manager of a local union in Central Ohio. And Carl had said he recognized your name, but he said, quote, "I know he's the governor of Massachusetts, and other than that, I don't know much about him. I can't put a pin on exactly how many votes he'll get out."
Okay, we can ask Kyle now what he thinks about it. I didn't meet Kyle out there. I love how the Herald just finds the one person that would make that comment. They probably talked to 50 labor leaders in Ohio that said, "Oh yeah, Marty Walsh, we welcome him." They find the one guy that makes a statement. But you know, it was great. No, people in Ohio should know who I am. I mean, that's not the intention. The intention was for me to go out there and talk to voters about the Democratic Party and talk to voters about the importance of getting out and voting and that elections have consequences. And many of the union members in Ohio and Indiana voted for Donald Trump. And many of those same union members that voted for Donald Trump are caught up in the Janus decision right now by the United States Supreme Court that they potentially lost some representation of their membership in their unions, which they'll get back through a process. But that's what elections have consequences. And I want to explain to them that elections have consequences. And just like some folks that you know, are pro-immigrants that might have voted for Donald Trump because they felt that he was strong in something else, the impacts that we're seeing, what he's doing to the immigrant community now is horrible.
So, Mayor Walsh, let me just ask you, I'm running over time here a little. I'm sorry, yeah. But you said something really interesting. So you know, because of your own history with labor, you're able to have frank conversations with labor members and leaders around the country. To those labor members that you talked to in Ohio, say, who did vote for Donald Trump, I mean, what did you talk to them about? What were they saying to you about how they see the president now, 2 years later?
It's a whole different story. You could feel it in the room. There was a lot of disappointment in I think, what they did. They wouldn't say it to me. They voted for him. No one would admit it. But I think that people need to understand that preserving the middle class is not about giving tax cuts to the top 2% in the country. Preserving the middle class isn't about banning Muslims from America or having talking about being tough on immigration and not coming up with an immigration policy that the president promised, being tough, being a person who ran, when he ran, he was going to create the biggest infrastructure bill in the history of the United States of America. And it was quite opposite of that. I think people understand that his words are very shallow right now and hollow, I should say, I guess. And we just got to continue to go out there and tell the message to Democrats.
Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghan Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.